What does the death of Christ on the cross have to do with the promise of a restored world? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson, your host. My conversation partners are again Larry Baverka and Dave Thomas. Our theme today is atonement and universal harmony. And I'd like to simply toss this question out. As you look of what Christ has done for us, what feature of the future, the universal harmony restored, what aspect of that is the most important one for you? Now, we've talked in terms of personal salvation, but I'd like to let's lift our horizons now in the broader scope.
Well, you know, that's, in some respects, it's a difficult question, because those who've had the privilege of looking at that future have admitted that human language fails to be able to really communicate what's there, the significance of that. And whatever we begin to imagine, the human mind can't even begin to conceive what God has planned or has in store for us. So in that sense, you know, there are very few things. I mean, well, streets of gold, wow. I mean, that's great, but it doesn't particularly, or Steve Marshall's Grandma on the Sea of Glass, you know, watching her skate across there. Well, those things are highly imaginative, but really don't crank me up. I think for me, what it boils down to is having the privilege of being where Jesus is. This one who has loved and done so much for me to be there, to be able to do that. And there is a scene in Great Controversy that really gets me to stirs the feelings, and that's when Ellen White describes the moment when the two Adams meet.
Mm.
I've read that, and I end up in tears every time I try to imagine what that's going to be like. Mm. Which then moves me to talking about the restored relationships, the reconnection with people loved, and all those promises to meet in the south from the people in southeastern California, to meet in the southeast corner of the New Jerusalem. Things of that nature that have more intrinsic, perhaps, meaning and value to me. I think those are some of the things that I anticipate or think about.
Dave?
You know, for me, I think the part of this that is most exciting and enticing, and the one I think about more than any other, is that in the restored world, the inclination toward wrong and wrong itself will both be gone.
Yeah.
Which means that life can be lived without this constant, the only word you can use is warring of good and evil. You know, to think that how often we, because of the corruption of human nature, we fall into wrongdoing and sin. That won't happen in heaven. Mm. And which really leaves open the fact that heaven will consist of, you can think of the most joyous moments of your life when you seemed to be the most free of the struggles of living and the struggles of evil, that heaven, in my way of thinking, will consist of a continual assembly of moments like that, only better. Mm-hmm. And I love the way the book Great Controversy ends, where it projects that we will one day look out on a universe that is pristine, that sin and evil itself will be gone, and even the residues of that will be gone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I think of that, there comes a great longing in my own soul for that day. I am sick and tired of evil and the carnage it wreaks on mm-hmm. personal lives, the struggle I have with it, you know, that everywhere we look, everything's broken. And, you know, those of us who are in professional ministry, we spend our lives trying to put things back together, and we never fully succeed. And even things that look like have been put back together, they break. You know, I was thinking the other day, you pick any family, you pick the most ideal family you can think of. Given time, some of them will be missing because of death or tragedy, you know. And all of this struggle and nonsense will simply be gone. Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to get me excited? I'm ready for that. If I left tomorrow, it's fine.
Yeah.
Well, that would be my second speech, would be the absence of evil. And, you know, on a good day, even children die.
Yeah.
For that to be at an end.
Yeah. And I don't want to discount at all what Larry said about the presence of Jesus. You know, I guess in my own mind, I've struggled to know how he's going to relate to me individually when he has millions of others. Mm-hmm. And so I guess I've never really, I mean, obviously I'm expecting a very happy and rewarding meeting between me and him.
But you'll have lots of time. You see, even if you get in the receiving line and have to wait 6 million years, you know?
Yeah.
You've got lots of time.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to that. But,
sure, yeah.
But just the grind of wrong and evil will simply be gone, both in myself and outside, and I'm ready.
I think, and it troubles me when I see people yearning for perfection here, because I see it as such a, in one sense, an impossible impossible challenge. There's an interesting quote. It's not a Christian quote, but it's from a man by the name of Livingstone. He was a British classicist, and he talks about the challenge of developing character, and he puts them in a half a dozen pairs: gentleness and courage, boldness and prudence, inquisitiveness and reverence, tolerance and firmness, confidence and humility, stability and freedom.
Yes.
You know, every single person that we're dealing with, we're constantly tussling with those. So there's one side of me says it would be wonderful just to be able to live a joyous life without worrying about stepping on somebody's toy. Because that's the thing that hurts me the most. When I get exuberant, and there are moments when I do, and then I discover then that my exuberance has been painful to someone else. That is really...
And Alden, you joke about difficult experiences being character-building experiences. Are we going to have those in heaven, character-building experiences?
If they are, they'll be great fun.
Okay.
But my all-time favorite passage in Scripture, I think, has to be Isaiah 11. The wolf shall live with a lamb. The leopard shall lie down with a kid. The calf and the lion and the fatling together, and a little child shall lead them.
Vegetarian lions.
Vegetarian lions. Vegetarian hawks. The kids will play even over the holes of the snakes. And no one will hurt in all my holy mountain, for the earth will be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea.
You know, I also think of those ones in Isaiah 65, I think it is, that talk about we will build houses and inhabit them, not others.
That's right.
That we will plant vineyards and eat the fruit of them.
Yeah.
And I have an experience from my childhood that's made that passage very dear, because I lived in an itinerant missionary circumstance. We never lived anywhere more than about 5 years. And I remember once being involved in planting a garden for a new house that had been built on a mission, and fussing at my mother, saying to her, well, we'll never get anything from this. And after that experience, we went home and she read to us from Isaiah. And after all that work planting trees for, you know, for a new home that was going to be occupied by somebody, that passage, I thought, oh, okay, so I get the picture. I'll do that here, but I'm not going to do it. I'm only going to do it once in heaven.
Yes. Now, there's another aspect that typically doesn't show up on most lists. And it is something that I think we need to focus on. Often devout conservatives who have that future hope have too often taken the position we don't have to worry about this world here. You know, we can even be fairly reckless. But it seems to me that if we have taken Jesus' story seriously, and I think of the parables in Matthew 25, Matthew 24 has the signs of the coming, but it's quite clear you don't know when he's going to come. And the parable there of the talents, where the Lord has given you talents, and you don't worry about when he's coming, you just go to work and invest those, and when he comes, you're glad to meet him. I think that's a fairly crucial passage. But maybe going back to Genesis 3 is a passage that I find very meaningful, where the Lord planted a garden and placed human beings in the garden. Typically, the most of your translations translate to till the garden, but if you look at the Hebrew word there, it's the Hebrew word for serve. He planted them in the garden to serve the earth. And I simply wish that as a community, we would live in hopes of that future world, but at the same time, put all of our energies as possible, as much as possible, towards making this world as much like that one as possible. Eliminating the pain, eliminating the hunger, being helpful, speaking the right word. It seems to me that's the way we really ought to follow the work of Jesus. Now, Larry, this is probably your last chance here, unless you stick around and we draft you to do some more of these, but you're going into retirement now. We hope a happy and healthy retirement. But you have a few moments here at the end. Do you have any last words that you would like to speak? This is a scary thing. I didn't warn you about this.
Oh, my, Alden. have taken me a bit by surprise.
But you see, we've given you a clock, so you don't have a lot of time.
Oh, I do see that, even though it's over my left shoulder. As you were talking about the care of the planet and the sort of a part of, we're told not to love this world, but I think that means the moral, ethical way this world operates. But I think in another way, we do love this world as our planet and as our home. And I've looked often at pictures taken from outer space of the planet. And to me, with all the rivers and the whatever going on, it looks like a giant living organism. Mm-hmm. And I wish we could often understand it that way, that the planet is something that we personify in literature and sometimes in language. But if we could somehow take it as a living organism that deserves care, that deserves our best care, we might, that would be a way of living, I think, truthfully to the mandate to love that God has given us.
Thank you very much, Dave and Larry and our program engineer, Josiah Hackenbrook. Maybe we could say, in one sense, next year in Jerusalem.
All right.
Mm-hmm. For Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.